So the title of presentation is Maybe It'll Take My Mind Off the Situation, Stressors, Coping, and Social Support for African-American Women with Incarcerated Partners. And just to give you a little context of this presentation, it's taken from a larger study where we looked at the emotional, financial, and emotional stressors related to having an incarcerated partner. So first, I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. So in thinking about partner incarceration, it's better to get a really understanding of the larger incarceration in the United States. So the number of people incarcerated in the United States in prison and jail has increased over 400% since the 1980s. And as of 2010, approximately 1.1% of the total U.S. adult population is incarcerated. And this steep increase has largely been driven by an increase in arrests and incarceration of people for drug possession. In 2009, African American males were 6 times more likely to be incarcerated than white males and even Hispanic males. Previous studies have estimated that nearly 50% of incarcerated males considered themselves in committed heterosexual relationships. So we wanted to know, since a large population of people are being incarcerated, especially African American men, what are the other effects? Primarily, research has looked at the effect on the men themselves or their children. But there's another piece that's also missing. So we wanted to focus on the partner incarceration. And the literature that has focused on the partner incarceration has looked at the health effects. How is he transmitting the HIV and STDs to his partner, and drug use patterns. So the limit research on the role of male partners before his incarceration has focused on increased financial responsibilities on the female partner, increased emotional strains, and difficulty maintaining the relationship. Often there's uncertainty about the sentence and the release date. There's often loss of intimacy, and there's suspicions of infidelity. And on a separate note, I wanted to know, how do women cope with the loss of their partner? We could think of different types of ways. You know, coping has been seen for women who've lost their partners, such as divorce, military. And so I wanted to know, how was coping handled for women who lost their partner to incarceration? And there's really a lack of this information for this population. But in general, for studies on African American women, they've shown that they have a tendency to minimize serious life problems, and that African American in general prefers social support and spirituality to deal with adversity instead of seeking former sources. And also, social stigma, social support, and social distance have been shown to influence willingness to seek mental health treatment and subsequent adherence to the recommendations by the physician or the psychologist. And then also, negative experiences can actually affect a person more strongly than positive forms of social support. So hearing negative things about your partner and having an incarcerated partner is going to do more to your psyche and your willingness to seek treatment than actually having a person, you know, supporting your decision. And we also have a particular focus on the impact of partner incarceration for women who misuse substance. As I stated before, a large percentage of this increase in incarceration has been due to drug possessions in males, and the research has shown that drug-using men often have drug-using women, and vice versa. So, as I say, there's a high likelihood of these women being with drug-using partners, and they might have qualitatively different experiences of partner incarceration, stressors, and coping mechanisms. For example, women who misuse substances often have reduced family support and great economic and housing instability. So, as I kind of stated before, my three research questions, especially for this presentation, were: what are the stressors related to partner incarceration for African American women? And how do the stressors differ between substance misusing and substance non-misusing women? And how are these stressors and coping strategies related to the decision to seek support, both formal and informal sources? So just a little brief, as I stated before, this is a study taken from a larger study called Project RISE that was designed to explore the processes through which Incarceration of a primary partner shapes women's emotional status, economic status, their drug use, and their children's welfare. We did four waves of qualitative interview over the course of a year, and our participants were African-American women in the Atlanta metro area with a male with a primary male partner who was recently incarcerated and was likely to be incarcerated for at least 6 months. Recruitment was very interesting for this study. And we quota sampled for both substance misusing and non-substance misusing women. And all 31 women were recruited and entered into the study, and 19 of these women were categorized as substance misusing. And then, just to give people more information about that, the partner himself, he had to be incarcerated within the past 12 months and had to either be sentenced or awaiting trial for one of the seven deadly sins, which was sexual assault, murder, one of the kind that most likely he would be waiting at least another 6 months because of the lengthy time to trial. For data collection, we did a one-on-one interview that lasted approximately an hour to an hour and a half, and each interview was audio recorded and transcribed verbatim. And we used grounded theory for analysis, and we did we developed a code book, and subsequent coding was performed by various members of our team. The current analysis focused on data collected from all four waves, and I did additional analysis to explore the differences between the substance misusing and non-substance misusing participants. So, results of my study. So, to frame this analysis and this presentation, I will focus on pretty much four key categories, which is financial insecurity, as this was a huge part of the women's lives, especially in that those four interviews, which was over the course of a year right after the partner's incarceration. Also, the quality of the relationship with the partner, as that had a tremendous determination on the outlook of her life and kind of the decisions that she was making, as well as parenting. And then also looking at the coping strategies she used to cope with the financial insecurity, the relationship issues, and the parenting responsibilities, and both the self-coping ways and the way she was receiving support from others. So look at financial insecurity. So most of the women became destitute after their partner entered prison and jail. And so the women that were hit hardest were women who had been financially dependent on their partner before incarceration, were not stably employed before the incarceration, and had few people who she could count on to provide financial support. And unfortunately, substance misusing women often fit this profile. They were dependent on assistance from others from before and during the incarceration period. Many of the women had long histories of substance abuse and had burned some bridges with family and friends and were really, really dependent on their partner for her survival before the incarceration event. And so after he was arrested, many women entered a period of housing turmoil. They lost their primary means of financial support, and therefore they couldn't take care of the most heavy financial burden, which is rent. And so more than half of the participants were living with family and friends or at a local shelter at their first interview. So one quote was, "After the incarceration, I moved in with my sister, but I guess she couldn't bear the financial burden that I was there with her, so I had to leave the household and now I'm in a shelter." However, by the end of the study period, most women were more stable than the period immediately following their partner's arrest. They were becoming connected with entitlement programs, they were searching for jobs, attending college. And that financial security seemed to increase most with women who have found their own housing or found long-term housing with family and friends. Securing housing provided the woman a foundation for getting her life back on track. So one participant said, "I'm trying to get things in order for when he comes home. My next step is either get an apartment or rent a house. I have things planned to finish school. I hope I can get hired on at my externship, and from there I'll be ready to move out and get some things situated." And for this participant, she was dependent. She had a history of substance abuse. She entered the shelter right after her partner was incarcerated. She lost her children during that process. And so her first step in getting back on track was to be able to secure a housing through one of the housing programs. However, despite these improvements, less than a third of the sample reported feeling financially secure by the fourth and final interview. And next, I wanted to talk about the relationship quality with the partner. So even for women that were more financially secure, providing financial assistance to the partner during the incarceration became a difficult challenge. Now, it wasn't just an extra expense. Some women felt that this was their time to step up. As I stated before, they were very dependent on their partner before incarceration, and they saw this time as an opportunity to prove their commitment to the relationship, even if it meant she sacrificing sometimes her housing, sometimes food, sometimes the most basic things in her life, because she felt like this was her role in the relationship and her time to really step up. So some of the partner's needs included money for phone calls, his books, which is like the commissary at the prison or jail for personal items, legal fees, and in some cases, caring for his children that they did not share. And these expenses made it very difficult for women to adjust to the emergency life expenses. So even women who were okay after the incarceration, things would come up in everybody's lives that when they had to take into account these rather large expenses, they became financially insecure. And to adjust, they had to increase sacrifices to accommodate his needs. But over time, women began to prioritize her needs first, as well as had less guilt in not meeting all of his wants. So one participant, she says, "He was angry at me about not putting money on his books. I'm beating myself up about it because I know how much feelings I got for him. No, I just accepted the fact that if I ain't got it, I ain't got it." And honestly, this was a very hard statement for many women, an idea for many of the women to get to. I wouldn't be surprised if this was the fourth or the third interview for this participant. I can't remember off the top of my head. But this was not the common thought for many of the women at the first interview. And telephone calls and visitations were often the only way to maintain intimacy in the relationship, which were very expensive and paid for by the women. So as women were again adjusting and shifting her priorities, these communications and the visitations had to reduce because they were very expensive. Some women reported like $4 for one call, and he would call every like two or three times a day, and women were paying $50 per week, and they're already on limited income. So as the communication reduced, conflict in a relationship increased. And there, because of this conflict, there increased suspicions about infidelity, commitment to the relationship, and concerns about abandonment were reoccurring issues in most relationships. Were very distressing for women who were making such great sacrifices to provide for a partner. And for substance misusing women, 12 of the 19 relationships ended by the end of the interview study. And this was generally due to limited opportunities for communication, as well as more immediate interest to get her life back on track. So 20 of the 30, overall 31 relationships continued at the end of the study. So we see that most of the relationships that had ended were misusing women. However, nearly all of the 31 and the 20 had reduced communication since the first interview. One participant says it's really frustrating now because the longer the sentence goes on, it's just getting a lot harder now to try to find money to put on the phone. It wasn't that bad starting out because I knew what to expect, and he said he was getting out sooner. And one of the most examined aspects of partner incarceration has been parenting. But parenting has looked at how parenting has been affected by the loss of that financial aspect. So I wanted to look more at what are the other reasons that could be affecting parenting. So women with children often face increased challenges after their partner incarceration. And one of the main things was that he was a significant contributor to the family, both as a source of income as well as a father figure and disciplinary for the children. And his removal increased financial insecurity and increased emotional stress on the women. So 6 of the women had infant children. And of these women, they did report increased financial insecurity because of the additional burden of financial responsibility. And so these women reported greater difficulty in child-related expenses, such as formula, diapers, and child care. One participant said she doesn't have anyone to babysit the baby. She works 2 jobs. She doesn't get any sleep. She has to get up to go to work. Everything she has to do is for the baby. What can I do for me? Nobody's offering me support. In addition, women with infants tend to be more financially insecure and had more concern about finding safe and stable housing, which was a huge thing because, as I said before, women who were financially unstable often had issues securing housing. But women with children, they had that housing instability, but were more concerned about making sure their children were in a very safe situation. And sometimes they had to sacrifice by going with family who did not welcome them, and that it just increased the emotional stress placed on them. 8 of the women had non-infant children that were under 18 years of age. And though they tend to be less affected financially by the incarceration, these women reported greater difficulty with their children's behavior. Many of the women feared a strained relationship. That was their biggest concern. It wasn't so much the money, it was what kind of relationship would my child have with him now that he's incarcerated and after. And they were worried about that length of time, that break. What would that mean in a relationship? And it went so far that some women wouldn't even tell their children where he was. There were some women that said he was off at war or that he was working on offshore at an oil rig just so they could maintain that respect the children had for their father. 5 of the women had children that were no longer in their custody. And these women tended to be women with history of substance abuse. One participant said, after I had my baby, I was homeless because my partner got locked up and I couldn't take her back to the rooming house because that's not a suitable place for her. So the Department of Family and Child Services got involved and it was recommended that I go to treatment for cocaine abuse. After the incarceration, these women began getting their lives on track with the goal of gaining custody. And as I will discuss later, this was a reoccurring issue for most of the women who lost their children. They lost their children either before the partner was incarcerated because they both had very strong drug using histories, or in the period immediately following incarceration because she had no way of taking care of herself or her children. But as she had to find services, she was able to start getting her life back on track. So after hearing a few of the stressors that were occurring in these women's lives, I wanted to know, how were women getting through this difficult period? So following the incarceration event, many women were hesitant to reach out to family and friends for support for fear of rejection and stigma of having an incarcerated partner. So during this time, women tended to utilize more social withdrawal and internal strategies. So social withdrawal typically were like crying, sleeping, working more hours, anything to basically remove herself from others, be in the presence of others, as well as trying to get her mind off of that situation. And also internal strategies were relying on faith, more praying, reading the Bible, also changes in alcohol and substance use. And surprisingly, there was a little bit of a shift. I didn't really talk a lot about it in this presentation, but some women increased their substance use because we all think like stress increases alcohol use and drug use. But some women, they had like a little peak like immediately following, but because of their money, they weren't able to secure funds for the alcohol and drug use. We think that's a good thing, but sometimes women went through a very, that peak, sometimes they did things that, anything they could for money, including trading for sex, finding new partners who were also drug seeking. So for this participant, she said, after his arrest, I realized I was drinking a lot more. I wasn't happy with my life, and I tried to take my life, so I went into treatment. I wasn't worried about boyfriends. I wasn't worried about nothing. I was just worried about staying clean. So for some women, the incarceration was actually an opportunity for getting her life back on track. And as time continued, women were able to find small circles of friends and families to continue to discuss her relationship and other important issues in her life. And also, women worked to become more financially secure. They began to utilize various external sources. So some of these external sources were drug treatment, ending or renegotiating their relationship roles with the partner, talking more with others such as her partner, family and friends, and even counselors and case managers. And also women began having new romantic and sexual partners. So some of the women began romantic partnerships for the emotional support, having someone who she could talk about her relationship with her partner, because some women had new partners even though they continued with their old partners. And some of them just needed a break. They needed to be able to talk to someone who didn't know their situation, who didn't know all that she had been through and know kind of the issues and the stigma that came along with it. And some women, as I mentioned before, found a new partner for instrumental and financial support. So one participant, she says, "My new partner and I have fun with each other, so I really don't stress too much when I'm with him. The only thing that really stressed me about was the relationship with the incarcerated partner. So this new relationship was an opportunity for her to relax, and she kind of let go of all the stress related with having an incarcerated partner." And for some women, the external coping strategy occurred more frequently and was more of a necessity. So women in shelters and substance misusing women reported more incidences of talking to counselors and caseworkers because of the support offered in shelters and treatment centers. The therapist at my drug center, my drug program, was just supportive. She didn't give me any response. She just allowed me to talk about him, her partner, and how I felt about him. It made me feel relief that I can finally talk to someone about his incarceration and what was going on with me in that part of my life. And it was unexpected, at least coming into this study, that women who actually had hit the lowest, such as going to drug treatment and going into shelter, actually found that support source that was missing for some women who were more financially secured and had maybe somewhat stable long-term housing. So participants with children also were often more willing to reach out to family and new partners for emotional, financial, and instrumental support. So just to wrap this up, many of the stressors were modified or caused by financial hardship. The lack of financial support systems and feelings of dependence on others increased these stressors. Financial dependence pre-incarceration increased financial hardship post-incarceration, and the difficulty in adjusting to the roles and relationship and guilt or frustration not being able to meet all his needs. Across cases, there were generally loss of intimacy, questions of infidelity, and uncertainty regarding the release date and the future of their relationship. So resilience was the strongest among the substance abuse women. They started off kind of they had more of the world against them at the beginning of the beginning, but they saw that the greatest amount of change by the end of the study, as many of them had found employment, were entering drug treatment, had found new partners that were not using drugs or had less drug use than their partners. And many of them were actually reconnecting with the family that they were not talking to before his arrest. And then there are also the greater opportunities for emotional and instrumental support from shelters and treatment centers. Let's see. So during the period immediately following the partner's incarceration, women experienced the highly stressful events. So just some strengths about our study. We did a longitudinal study, so we were able to explore the changes over time. And then in doing the analysis, we were able to review past, because of our transcripting methods, we were able to review past transcript before conducting follow-up interviews, which is great because we were able to really see missed opportunities in past interviews and follow up with women about specific things that they had discussed in their interview process. We had 100% retention. Everything was digitally recorded and transcribed verbatim. We did group coding, and we discussed every week about past interviews as well as coding. We also examined negative cases, which weren't discussed too much, but there were a group of women who were not financially insecure, but that burden of the emotional support was really heavy for this group of women, but I didn't include them in this presentation. So some of the limitations, of course, there's a lack of generalizability to populations outside of this study sample. We did interviews both at Emory, where I did my analysis, as well as in their homes. But sometimes if they didn't have a stable housing situation, such as shelters and drug treatment, we were in a room or an office, and they may not have felt always the safest. Some women, they were with new partners, and the new partner was kind of right there in the next room, and it was difficult talking about their incarcerated partners and missing the partner if the new partner was close by. And we also, the recruitment strategies may have overrepresented one population of women. We saw, we went to local shelters, the Atlanta Harm Reduction Center, and predominantly African-American low-income neighborhoods. And then there's a difference of people who may be in studies. The women who participated in the study may be very different from women who did not continue the relationship. So women who may enroll in the study, they may have already made that decision to continue their relationship versus those who didn't enroll. So just some implications for public health practice. We have a greater need for support sources for family and romantic partners of incarcerated men. There's been some understanding about the need for resources for children, but there hasn't been a lot being done for the romantic partners. And there's easier ways to create these sources, such as information about jail and prison policies and what to expect. Many of the women gave all that she could because she was worried about his safety and what he could receive while in jail and prison. So knowing what to expect was really helpful for some women, as well as this information about assistance programs for women with children and those experiencing housing instability. So some women participated in online or in-person group sessions, and they really enjoyed it because it was an opportunity for them to reach a population that may not be well known in the community, and they were able to talk to other women who were experiencing the same thing. And during that, it could provide resources about teaching positive coping strategies, providing local mental health services, and opportunities to talk and deal with others dealing with the same situation. And again, just extend the research to look at the emotional well-being for female partners, as well as kind of extend this to understand how these stressors might lead to unsafe sexual practices, and during that period immediately following his incarceration, increased substance abuse. So I just want to acknowledge the women that participated, as well as our funding and our funders.